We're in Panihati.
Jai.
Near the Ganga. In the house of Raghava Pandit. And all the devotees that live in Panihati, all the Panihati Vaishnavas, are coming to meet Gauranga. So Gadadhar Das had arrived, and he was greeted with the lotus feet of the Lord placed on his head. Very beautiful welcoming. Parameshri Das came, and they cried in ecstasy. Now one doctor also came. Raghunatha Vaidya Lena Taktak Shane Parama Vaishnava Anta Nahi Janra Ghune. Raghunath Vaidya was a doctor, a physician. He also came to the home of Raghava Pandit. He was a great Vaishnava with unlimited good qualities. E mata yata Vaishnava Chila Sabhe Prabhurastane Asya Milila. In this way, Vaishnavas came from wherever they were to meet Gauranga. Panihati grame haila paramananda apane sakshata yata Prabhu Gora Chandra Paramananda Prabhu Gora Chandra Paramananda Prabhu Gora Chandra Paramananda Prabhu Gora Chandra Paramananda Prabhu Gora Chandra. The village of Panihati became filled with ecstasy. For Lord Gora Chandra was personally present there. Hari Bhav. Raghava Pandit Prati Shri Gora Sundar Nibrite Karila Kichu Rahasya Uttar. Shri Gora Sundar spoke some confidential topics to Raghava Pandit in a solitary place. Nibrita Kichu Rahasya Uttar. Very high Uttar, Rahasya, very high topics. Like we say, Purna Punartara Purnatam. Tara, Purnam, Purnam Bhagavan and Dwarka, Purnatara Bhagavan and Mathura and Purnatam Bhagavan and Vrindavan. So this Tara means Rahasya Uttara, Uttam Uttara, Ut. So very high topics, confidential topics. Now the curious reader will be in a suspenseful mood in his mind. Why did they meet in a lonely place? Well, that first they said they met in a nibritta place. Means lonely place. Why? Because it's confidential. So this means in the Vaishnava Sangha that there is such a thing as confidential topics. There's private talks. Not all are invited. All are taking darshan of the Lord. All are relishing the Paramananda, being there in Panihati during the Lord's auspicious visit, but not all are called to the Nibritta Sangha. That there must be some qualification, some adhikar, an invitation of the Lord. The other people were not directly invited by the Lord, they came on their own will. Oh, the Lord is there, let us go see. But here, the Lord has personally, by his own will, he has gone to visit Raghava Pandit. Asya Shaki Champaklata. And now that he's gone there, he's visiting, residing there in Panihati in the house of Raghava Pandit and his sister Damayanti, he's chosen to be alone with Raghava to speak something high topics, Rahasya Uttara. So often the devotees will meet privately, as the Sadgoswamis would regularly hold afternoon classes in Seva Kunj. And many, many devotees would come there to meet and hear the katha. Raghunath Bhatta would read the Bhagavatam and give some commentary, and Jiva Goswami would sit there in the assembly. And Rupa and Sanatan and Gopal Bhatta. And then Sri Haridas Pandit and many other devotees that were living there with them. They would all gather for the Bhagavat Pat in the afternoon. But quite often, the six Goswamis would meet alone together in the private place, a Nibritta Kunj, a Nibritta place at Radha Damodar. Then they would discuss very, very high topics together. Sad Goswami. So here Gauranga is speaking. Now, so then the next question is, well, what was that Uttara Rahasya? Was he going to reveal his Sadbhuj form? Was he going to tell Raghava that he's God? What was he going to, what tattva, what point of tattva, what secret topic and confidential point was he going to explain as Krishna went to a lonely place on a battlefield with Arjuna? And he spoke something, because there were only two people. Their chariot driver was there and Arjuna. Who was the chariot driver?
Krishna.
Actually, that's a misnomer. You know, they say Parthasarathi. It says Parthasarathi. I heard some classes on Mahabharata, and they explained that although it sounds quite glorious, because we equate the position of Partha, the son of Prita, Parthasarathi, the chariot driver, we equate that in modern vernacular with a chauffeur, the driver. In India, everyone has their driver. Even if you have a tin car worth 1 lakh, you have a driver. You have an 800 Maruti, you have a driver. But in America, unless you have nobody has a driver. You have a Porsche, you don't have a driver. You'd rather drive yourself. So the sarati, we generally think that that Krishna's standing on the chariot and his hair is blowing in the wind, and his beautiful lotus face, and his unfading garland, and he's holding the reins of the horses. Come on, let's go. Giddy up, let's go. That's the stereotype picture we have in our mind of Krishna driving the chariot. He's standing there. Fresh air blowing in his face, nice clean tilak, everything nice looking. You know, chandan, Ardha Chandra, sandalwood tilak on his forehead. Arjuna is behind him in a little elevated place, shooting arrows over his head. But according to the actual understanding of Mahabharata, the chariot driver's position is sitting on the yoke between the horses. He sits with his face below the rear end of the horses. The chariot is two wheels like this, and there's some axle where joining the wheels, and some asana and seat, you know, some cabin or some seat built on top of the axle on the wheels. Then there's something, so this is like, this is the chariot, the book. Then there's a piece of wood that goes like this, right? Whatever that's called. It's called yoke or something. And there's horses on either side. And that's to keep them from hitting, you know, running into each other, whatever, control them. One horse, when there'd be four horses or two or whatever. Arjuna's chariot, how many horses it had?
Six.
Six, so there'd be two, two, two. It goes in a line like this. I don't think it goes sideways. Goes like two by two. So Krishna's sitting on top of this thing, sitting like this. You don't even see the head of the chariot driver. He's invisible. There's the archer, and then his chariot is made like this, and it has a high back and a high front to protect him from arrows. The front comes up as high as his face. So he's like. Just enough to shoot over that. So he's like behind a wall. He's not just something standard. It's some protection. And then, so now the chariot here, so all this mud from the feet. When a guy is sitting on top of a horse as a jockey riding in a horse race, so much mud comes on his face and so much, I don't know, he's all covered with mud at the end of the race. Imagine when you're sitting down there. This was, and then at the end of the day, the chariot, so there are only two people there on that chariot. So this is just a little side point about what was the actual, and then so the actual driver of the chariot was not, the point I'm making, the actual driver of the chariot, of course, is the immediate cause and the efficient cause. The actual driver of the chariot is not exactly, it's like, who's driving the chariot? Who's driving your car? The stick shift, the gas pedal, and the brake, or you?
You.
You. So what was happening is that Krishna is sitting on this transom, or this, whatever you call this, yoke, joining the horses, which is at the base of the carriage, and you can't see him. But he's doing some, he's taking commands. The actual driver is Arjuna, because Arjuna is up there watching the field. He sees Because he sees what soldier he wants to shoot or combat with. So he would step on the shoulders of Krishna. Arjuna would step with his shoe on his shoulder. Right shoulder means turn right, and left shoulder means turn left, and put behind the head means slow down or speed up like this. And then that's how it was going on. So the driver was, so you put your foot on the gas, down, less, increase, decrease, brake, turn this wheel right and left. And so the actual driver was Arjuna. He was driving and shooting. But he was communicating his wish to drive through the living and physical arrangement of the horses and through Krishna. Krishna was down there, so he would pull the horses in a certain way and this and that, and they would go different directions. This is what I heard in one lecture in Mahabharata. And then at the end of the day, the sarati who takes care of the horse, he has to brush them and clean them and feed them certain foods and all this. And Krishna would do all this work, and then he would go meet with Arjuna. This is told. If people want to know, they can type in, and we can tell them who it is. At any rate, this is Mahabharata with the commentaries. So this is this lonely place. Bhagavad Gita was spoken, just the two of them, Krishna and Arjuna. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. So it was a great rahasya, a great secret. But that secret was let out to everyone by the mercy of Veda Vyas. He recorded all the Vedas in Bhagavad Gita. Literary incarnation of Krishna. So that Veda Vyasa has come again as Vrindavan Das Thakur. And he's going to reveal the secret teachings of... Now Arjuna has become Raghava Pandit in this particular teaching, and Krishna has become Gauranga. Now what is the secret teaching that we're going to learn about? Because of mercy of yesterday, we learned the secret teachings, the Guhyam, Raja Guhyam, secret teachings of Arjuna. I wasn't on the battle of Kurukshetra, neither were you. We can learn about it by the mercy of Vyasadeva. So now, what are the secret teachings that Gauranga, this is the Gauranga Raghava Pandit Samvad. Here it is. Raghava Tamare Ami Nija Gopya Kai Amara Dvitya Nahi Nityananda Bhai. I have something very, very secret and confidential to tell you, Raghava Pandit. Nityananda is non-different from me. Amara dvitiya nahi. There's no dwait. There's no difference. So he's going to give several teachings here, secret teachings. Hey Nityananda jay karaya amare sei kari ami e balila tomare. I tell you, I do whatever Nityananda wants me to do. Amara sakala karma Nityananda dware akapateye ami kahila tumare. I tell you frankly, Raghava, that all my activities are performed through Nityananda. Yami sei Nityananda beda nai tumara gare sabha janiba etai. Everyone in your house will come to know that Nityananda is not different from me. So this will come to know. There must be something more is coming up, more suspense. How will they come to know? What's going to happen next? What will you do? How will we know? Up to this point, we don't know that Nityananda is not different from you. There's Nityananda Avadut, and there's Nimai Pandit, who was previously married, now he's a sannyasi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. See, everyone's coming. Everyone's coming to gather there to meet, but we've heard of Parameshwari Das, we've heard of Gadadhar Pandit, and we've heard Raghava Pandit, that's his village. Some devotees, and many Raghunath Vaidyas come, and Vaishnavas came from wherever they were. So he's saying, well, there's someone else is going to come very soon, you're going to learn something. That's foreshadowing. Everyone in your house will come to know that some good news is on its way. Mahayogeshware yaha payate durlab, Nityananda hayate taha payiba sulaba. For Nityananda you will easily obtain that which is rarely attained by the best of mystic yogis. That's very interesting. These are the kind of verses that are cited by there's some groups of Gaudiya Vaishnavas that emphasize very much Nityananda. Heno nitai bhai Radhakrishna payate nai. He will adjust everything and he will place you wherever you're needed to be placed and he will reveal whatever you need to know about Radha and Krishna or Gauranga, non-difference of Radha and Krishna and Gauranga. So from Nityananda you will easily attain. That which is Durlabh will become Sulabh. Eteki hayav tumi mahas savadhan Nityananda seviha yo yahena bhagavan. Therefore you should very carefully serve Nityananda, knowing him to be the Supreme Lord himself. Bhagavan. Makara dvajakara prati Sri Gauranga Chandra Balilena Sevihi Tumi Sri Raghavananda. Sri Gauranga turned to Makara Dvajkara and he said, you should serve Sri Raghavananda. So he is in Vrindavan Leela, this Makara Dvajkara is Chandramukha, a famous dancer in Vrindavan. So he's pointing different devotees in different directions to do seva. He's pointing some to Nityananda. He's telling some devotees, you serve God, Nityananda. And other devotees, say, you serve this devotee. So in these two verses, we find two essential tattvas of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. The Bhagavat Tattva and the Vaishnav Tattva. The equality of both and the supreme efficacy of serving either one. Whether one serves God directly, he'll attain perfection. And whether one serves God's devotee, the Vaishnava, he will attain perfection. Vaishnav Seva will give you perfection in God consciousness. And Bhagavat Seva and Bhagavan Seva will give you perfection in God consciousness. So he's telling Raghava, Pandit, to serve Nityananda, who is God, Supreme Lord. And he's telling Makara Dwaj Kara to serve the Vaishnava, devotee, Raghava, Nanda, Raghava, Pandit. This is important. We should, even Lord Chaitanya is trying to remind us, as is Vrindavan Das Thakur, of the non-difference between Hari Guru Vaishnav. Hari is Guru, Guru is Vaishnava, Vaishnava is, it's like this, Hari Guru Vaishnava, Seva Vaishnava and Seva Hari and Seva Guru. It's ultimately one conclusion. Gauranga goes on. Raghava Pandit Pratiye Priti Tomar Se Kevila Sunishchaya Janiha Amar. Know for certain that your love for me, Makara Dvajkara, will be shown by your love for Raghava Pandit. Love me, love my dog. Love me, Bhagavan, love me, servant. So Gauranga is Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So if you love me, which obviously he does, now you have to direct your loving service and you can show how much you love me by how much you lovingly serve Raghava Pandit. Hine mate panihati grama danyakari achilena katadina Sri Gauranga Hari, Sri Gauranga Hari. Gram Danya Hari, Sri Gauranga Hari. Gram Danya Kari, Sri Gauranga Hari. In this way, Lord Gauranga made the village of Panihati glorious by staying there a few days. So he really, how did he make it glorious? He honored one Vaishnava by bathing, embracing him tightly with love and bathing with his tears, giving him a full Abhishek with his tears. Another Vaishnava, he gave Rahasya Katha. Another Vaishnava engaged in the service of God. Another Vaishnava engaged in the service of the Vaishnavas. He took prasadam there. And he met all of his devotees and he glorified them. He basically was there on a mercy mission, as I say. Mercy mission. When he first arrived there, when he came to Raghava's house, Lord Chaitanya was so happy to be there then. Because if someone is a good cook, then when you meet them, what will you ask them to do? Can you cook me something? If someone knows how to sing bhajans, for example, and you may be cooking with them in the kitchen for Giriraj's festival, then it's natural you will turn to them and say, oh, you know so many songs, can you sing some bhajans? So this is the expertise, and Krishna and Guru, especially Gauranga, is expert in bringing out the best in his followers. So as soon as he got there, of course, what gives Champakalata the greatest happiness? Cooking. To cook for Krishna. And Madhyan Leela, because, you know, Madhyan Leela means lunchtime. Lunchtime is the middle of the day, so from 11 o'clock until 3:30, Krishna's at Radhakund in the various groves and forests, and that's like high noon, and when the sun is in the highest place in the sky, the fire of digestion is at its peak between 11 and 2. So generally people are recommended, if they're intelligent, to eat their main meal the day between 11 and 2 because the Jataragni is at the highest pitch. It's analogous, it follows the sun. The sun is weak in the early morning, so we should put a little bit of food in our belly. It's called nasta, breakfast, just some little thing. Put too much, you put out the fire. Like too many clouds in the morning can cover the sun. So then when the sun gets high noon, 11 to 2, that's like fire time. So the stomach is also peak of fire. So it's good time to stoke the furnace. So Lord Chaitanya said, listen, you know, now when Krishna comes to Madhyan Leela, then he's very hungry in the midday. And you go in the middle of the day around 1 o'clock, 1:30, go on the Radhakund and have water splashing for 25, 30 minutes. They're really hungry. Then they stop and kind of drive into Champak's drive-in. Champak Lata's fast food joint. I go to Champakalata's grove, and then she has her kitchen there. She has a whole portable kitchen set up. I mean, it's permanently there. And all arrangement there to make wonderful preparations. It's all forest picnic type thing. It's not your standard, you know, five-star Punjabi tiffin. It's not a five-star Punjabi tiffin, gourmet tiffin, but it's lots of exotic forest things, fruits and salads and a few nice special sweets that have been courier-mailed from Barsana and Yavat that can't be made in the forest. They can only be made in the palace kitchens with elaborate arrangements. So those are also there and some tiffins. So he's arrived there and said, Raghava, please cook. And while that's going on, he principally, of course, went there to meet Raghava and to exchange love with Raghava. Is Nitya Parishad. But at the same time, his mission is always, Gauranga's mission is always exchanges of love and teaching. Directly teaching. And Krishna's mission and his Vrindavan Leela is simply teaching through his exchanges of love. His exchanges of love itself are teaching the Prem Tattva. But Lord Gauranga, he's having exchanges of love. That's the internal reason for his pastimes here, and externally he's doing the Yuga Dharma, which involves lots of teaching, aside from distributing the holy name, which is the practice or the Abhideya. But the Sambandha must also be established. So Lord Chaitanya was presenting everything in this triad way of Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojan. So Gadadhar Das came there in Raghunath Vaidya. But then, although he exchanged love with Raghava Pandit, and he also spoke some very confidential things to him. Then he gave some instructions about serving the Vaishnavas. If you love me, then serve my Vaishnavas. So he's, like once one devotee said to Prabhupada, he said, I like being in the temple and serving Krishna, not trying to develop love for Krishna and serving with devotion and feelings, but I can't so much relate to the devotees and my godbrothers so much. It was a man. And then Prabhupada said, if you can't learn to love your godbrothers, if you can't learn to love and lovingly serve and love and serve the Vaishnavas, then you can never actually learn to love and serve Krishna. So the love starts there, like a beam of light. It starts in one place. The sun starts in one place and it spreads throughout the universe. It's concentrated. In one place, all the heat and light of the sun are concentrated. Then it's diffused throughout the wide expanse of the universe. One universe, one sun. Similarly, our love for the Lord should be like a sun. I mean, love for the devotees should be like a sun, concentrated sun planet. And then from there it diffuses, from love of the Vaishnavas, it diffuses to all the living entities. And touch, finally, it spreads all the way through the universe and touches the heart of the Lord. The last recipient of that ray of our love is the Lord. But on that ray of love from our heart will never reach the Lord unless it shines on the devotees first. That ray, those rays of love. You can't just say, I'll forget you. I don't have to shine, I don't have to love or serve you. Bhagavan. Direct. It won't work. Evam prampra praptam imam rajarshayu vidu sakalini mata. Like that. So, question being asked, but the ideas of a grand disciple, let's say, if Prabhupada is someone's param guru, then they are initiated from one of Prabhupada's disciples, how does that Vaishnava or devotee, how does he relate to Prabhupada or approach Prabhupada or pray to Prabhupada or in relation to his own immediate Diksha Guru without committing the offense of jumping over or bypassing or committing what is called Guru Avagya, disregarding the Guru. There's not any particular written answer to this question. When Prabhupada, we see there's small anecdotes of relating to a similar point where disciples of Prabhupada were trying to some way approach directly or have some connection with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and his famous statement that Prabhupada said, don't try to jump over. You can't go directly like that. You have to go through the representative of Bhaktisiddhanta. I mean, we as and you gave a preface to this whole question by saying that Prabhupada is Adi Guru of ISKCON, founder of ISKCON, and wrote all the books, and we worship him every day, and we read his purports every day, and he's our like Mukhya Guru, etc. That's true. But I'm just trying to compare parallel things here because we are disciples of Prabhupada, and we consider that Prabhupada was underneath his guru, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was the founder, that ISKCON was an expression of Bhaktisiddhanta and a continuation of what Bhaktisiddhanta started and a further expansion of what he started. Not that it was something new or different or independent. And Bhakti, so Prabhupada, I see him as the perfect disciple of, in one level, perfect disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta in the sense that he, Saraswati Thakur, in the sense that he really spread the movement far and wide, which was the wish of Bhaktisiddhanta himself and the wish of his father, every town and village, and the wish of Lord Gauranga. But we never really, we said the pranam prayers to Bhaktisiddhanta, and we considered him very respectfully, and occasionally read a few English books that he published. But our aim and our whole focus was on Prabhupada. And I feel that that's what is the proper way to go. I don't, because there's no need to make some separate agenda to worship Bhaktisiddhanta for me, that everything of Bhaktisiddhanta will come through Prabhupada. Although he himself independently has vast English writings and harmonist magazines are all in English and all kinds of books, etc. I think we should just follow the program that Prabhupada gave us, because even during Prabhupada's presence, he didn't emphasize so much that even we fix our minds that much on him, as much as he wanted us to fix our minds on Radha and Krishna and Gauranga's preaching movement. He didn't want us to be Prabhupada cultists. He called it a society of Krishna consciousness. He wanted us to become lovers of Krishna. Of course, it's already understood that we have to do that. We have to love Prabhupada. So loving Prabhupada means loving his, like we said, that's what Lord Chaitanya is telling. He said, sir, that's the same point of what we're discussing. He's telling Makara Dwajkara, you love Raghava Pandit. And then that's how you love me. So I think someone's love for Prabhupada and their surrender to Prabhupada will be shown on how much they serve and love their guru, who is properly connected with Prabhupada and carrying out Prabhupada's mission and the mission of ISKCON. I think it's one and the same. It's not different. No separate package or no separate approach has to be made. We attend the Guru Puja of Prabhupada because we have a special indebtedness to him. Just like in India, in a business establishment, it was started by your great-grandfather. And the whole Parivar and family's been making lots of money on the business, and his picture is there because he started this sari business, cloth business. So even today, your father, who is the grandson, and when you go to work, your father offers incense to that picture and a flower to show his respect and his regard. And you follow with him. But your main relationship is with your father, not with your grandfather. Although you appreciate that your grandfather started this business. I mean, it's not a very poor analogy, but I think it's a matter, it's an attitude. But it's not that guru is everything, and that means the Diksha Guru. That's everywhere. I see that in the Shastras. We can't create a new Siddhanta. We have great affection, love, and Prabhupada is unique and special and the most special, and all these things were certainly true. But the Sandarbhas are there as the foundation of Tattva for all Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And the emphasis everywhere throughout the Bhagavatam and Lord Krishna's teachings in Uddhava Gita, he's emphasizing Acharya Mam, the present day, the Acharya, the Diksha Guru is me. Prabhupada is also Acharya Mam, he's also a representative of Krishna. What Prabhupada was to his disciples, the present gurus are to their disciples. This is the actual point. So because it can be a dangerous where if one minimizes his Diksha Guru or his beloved or prominent Shiksha Guru, and any possible way to emphasize a Param Guru, Paratara Guru, that can be very dangerous. Because we may think, this present disciple may think, well, it's Prabhupada's books, and we're getting everything from Prabhupada's books. You're not. Without the Guru, you can't get anything from Prabhupada's books. Just like we couldn't get anything, Prabhupada himself, you know, we couldn't get much from Bhaktisiddhanta's writings and books, but Prabhupada made it accessible to us. I've heard many devotees, Prabhupada, second generation or whatever, disciples of God brothers around the world as I met them, and they said that I don't understand Prabhupada's purports. You know, the modern class of the young people See, I need my guru explains Prabhupada's books to me. So it's almost like each successive generation, there's a necessary link with a guru. I think it can become a little dangerous if one tends to relativize or try to... Well, because, for example, Bhakti Siddhanta was there, but okay, all glories in Bhakti Siddhanta, my life and soul is Prabhupada. So I almost feel like it's a similar point that all successive followers of ISKCON, say 200 years from now, ISKCON, 200 years from now, you know, 200 years from now, ISKCON. And so those devotees, if we start creating some, oh no, your own guru, this, you know, Prabhupada 200 years ago, the founder, you should put everything there. And I don't think this is what we find in the Sandarvas or in Uddhava Gita or in anywhere in discussions of Guru Tattva or Vaishnava Tattva or Guru Shishya Tattva, that the Guru is everything. And that's the tradition, not only in our Gaudiya Sampradaya, but all Vaishnava Sampradayas. There's no jumping over to some previous founder Acharya. No one goes, well, the most prominent Acharya of the Madhva Sampradaya is Madhva, so we should all worship Madhva. That's basically what you're saying. That Prabhupada is almost like a Sampradayak Acharya, and some people try to say like that. He's a Sampradayak Acharya for Kali Yuga and things like this. So that's a sentiment and that's a feeling, and you can substantiate it on some levels. But Prabhupada himself didn't accept that type of position. So this is my understanding, is that the Diksha Guru should always be the most prominent, and the supporting Shiksha Gurus would support the foundation and which help develop the foundation and build upon the foundation of the Diksha Guru. Those friendly, supportive Shiksha Gurus should always be given prominence. But their strength, the strength of those present Gurus, is how much they're connected to that the founder and the author, Srila Prabhupada, and who started this movement. But someone comes in a jiva's life and saves him from the ocean of birth and death and gives him the Pancharatrika Diksha and observes the Pancha Sanskaras with him and thereby and gives him the Tarak Mantra to liberate him and trains him in the principles and practices of Sambandha Videya and Prayojana. And if one duly surrenders to such a guru, he's Acharya. Guru means, it's another way of saying Acharya, guru, Hare Krishna. I think that's one of those unlimited points of discussion which everybody in not seven continents can offer their opinions. But I think the basic thing is that as much as you love, serve, surrender, and dedicate your life to your guru, that's as much as you'll attain perfection. I only know someone named Srila Prabhupada. I don't know if he's Acharya, guru, this, that. Bhagavad Gita says you need a guru. Taviti pranipate na parayaprasanya sevya upadakshanti te gyanam. So I'm a very foolish person. I read Gita and I understood I need to find a proper guru, a spiritual teacher that can teach me how to love God and show me how to love God and help me attain perfection in spiritual life and go to the spiritual world and realize my eternal loving relationship. And he's a tattvajnani. He knows the truth. So Prabhupada fit that definition. So I surrendered and tried my best to serve him. And the rest is up to my guru. Hare Krishna. Well, don't forget, we're in Panihati. Yes. And know for certain that your love for me will be shown by your love for Raghava Pandit. So Gauranga was telling Raghava Pandit to serve God, Nityananda. He was telling Makara Dwaj Kara, who's another eternal associate, to serve Raghava Pandit. So our love for Krishna will be shown by how much we serve his devotee. Prabhupada, I don't think Prabhupada would be unhappy. Prabhupada himself would use the phrase, if you love me, love my dog. So we are Prabhupada's dogs. All of Prabhupada's disciples are Prabhupada's dogs. So if you love Prabhupada's dogs, who are the gurus, then surely Prabhupada will be pleased, and that's how you'll show your love for Prabhupada. And if you show your love to Prabhupada and his disciples, I'm sure you'll go back to Godhead. No doubt about it. Om Tat Sat.